Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday, April 7th, 2026 meeting of the House of Representatives State Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to renew or review the minutes?
I've renewed them and I've reviewed them.
Okay.
I would move their approval.
Moves the approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Those are done, and we are moving on. Today, we are joined by our legislative auditor, who is going to come up and walk through the 2026 OLA recommendation updates. And this is sort of an overview, members, if you will, to the implementation of House File 3 that was in our committee, that was in our omnibus bill, and walk through some of the benefits and things that are going on with that, and sort of cast a vision for things to move in the future. So if you would, please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Judy Randall, Legislative Auditor. Nice to see you all this morning. Welcome back from break. Hope you're ready for the final sprint. As Chair Nash said, I am here to talk about our 2026 OLA recommendation update report. This was, as Chair said, part of House File 3 last year, and has now been implemented into our statutes. It requires OLA to submit a report. I'm just going to look at the actual law to tell you exactly what it requires. By February 1 each year, the legislative auditor must submit a report to chairs and ranking minority members of different committees with fiscal jurisdiction over an entity subject to audit by OLA, and the report must detail whether the entity has implemented any recommendations identified by the legislative auditor during the prior 5 years in any of our reports, a financial audit, a program evaluation, or a special review. So basically, it's a look back over the past 5 years of our recommendations, working with agencies to see the extent to which those recommendations have been implemented. So this past year was the first year that we implemented this new law, and we're kind of doing it on a rolling basis and figuring it out as we go. And so certainly open to your feedback in terms of what's helpful and what you'd like to see more of, or I guess less of as well. But I'll walk through a little bit of the report in front of you. We kind of divided the work into two different sections, the financial audit review and our program evaluation review. And what this has allowed us to do is to go back to the agencies that we've audited and work with them in, frankly, a really collaborative way to get an understanding of which recommendations have been implemented. We reach out to them. We say, here are all the recommendations we made. Report back to us, first of all. That's our first step on what you've implemented and what you haven't implemented. And, you know, they'll share with us things that they haven't implemented. They'll share with us the policies or new things that they've updated. And then they'll say, yep, we've implemented these other things. But it's not something that they can just give us a document of, right? It's like, yes, of course, we now require all grantees to, or all grant application reviewers to complete conflict of interest forms. But that's not something that we can just take their word for, right? And so this new law and the resources that you gave us with it, which is two additional FTE, which is helpful, and now allows us to go in and do the independent work, to go in and actually pull a sample again and look to see, you know, again, in my example, were the conflict of interest forms actually signed and completed in advance of each grant review. That's just one example. But again, these additional resources help us to go in, do an independent review and confirmation of whether recommendations have been implemented or not. We then pull together our assessment. We send the report back to each agency for them to review and comment, like we do for all of our work. And we've had a really good exchange with them to identify where we think things maybe aren't quite there yet, or where they have been implemented. You'll note in the report in front of you, we have a couple of different implementation statuses. So implemented, we're like, yep, check, they did it. Partially implemented, you know, maybe they've done some of it, but more work needs to be done. Not implemented. Work needed to determine implementation is recommendations that we just simply didn't have the resources this time around to really dig into, and so we can't confirm or deny if the recommendations have been implemented. And then sometimes they're not applicable. Maybe an agency changed or it was a one-time project that hasn't been replicated or repeated. I will note that I thought agencies have done a pretty good job, frankly, in implementing our recommendations. I did kind of a quick count, and based on the recommendations that we dug into in this report, 53% of the recommendations were implemented fully, 28% were partially implemented, and then 19%, so less than 20%, were not implemented. And that's across all the types of recommendations. And I know when we had a discussion about this bill and what this might look like. Last year, there were concerns about the different types of recommendations, right? So for our performance audits, those are things where, you know, it's an internal control. Like, this needs to be done. If it's not implemented, if a recommendation hasn't been implemented, that's a problem because it's related to an internal control that's a requirement based on policies. On the other hand, our recommendations from program evaluations may be a little more subject to interpretation. So if those aren't implemented, you know, and you'll note in the notes that we say here that the agency didn't agree or didn't think it was worth their time to reclaim the, you know, the extra money. And that's fine, right? I mean, that's for you guys to review and look and come to your own determination about. So this report is really intended to do a couple of things, and I think this was the intent of House File 3. One is to help keep agencies, you know, accountable and to show them that somebody's looking and following up on these recommendations, and that's us. And I think, you know, paying attention, you know, the things that get measured are the things that happen, right? That's just kind of, you know, when you take a test in school, the things that you test are the things that students focus on. And so this helps to put more attention on these items that are recommendations, and it helps to focus agencies' attention on them. And then the results are then for you all. That's the second step of the accountability and oversight, is for you to receive this report and use the information that's in here to ask your own questions of agencies. And, you know, perhaps there's some where you think an agency should be implementing it, and that's an opportunity for you to ask more questions. Or perhaps some of these, you know, you think that's fine, and that's obviously your judgment. You'll also note at the end of the report, we walk through the recommendations we made to the legislature, and these tend to be more in our program evaluations, and we identify where relevant legislation was passed. And so, you know, I think it's really interesting, I think, to skim these back couple of pages, and you can see, for example, a lot of changes to law were made related to emergency ambulance services, yet really no legislative action so far has happened related to guardianship of adults. And that might also be something interesting for you all to take a look at and think about as you're thinking forward to other future sessions. So that's really the overview. I'm happy to answer any questions. I will again say I think we've had a really good working relationship with the agencies. They seem to be responsive to it, and I think they're getting used to it. And all, from all I know, that it's going well. And I know MMB is here and can also speak to that. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Auditor. Quick question for you as the author of House File 3. It was my also intent when I wrote the bill and presented the bill here in committee that it wouldn't just be for the regular evaluations that you do, but there are also going to be other things that where you've made recommendations around internal controls. Can you give a kind of a brief look forward as to what you expect to do in the next couple of revolutions of this same report relative to internal controls?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. So the report in front of you today includes the reports from both our program evaluations and our financial audit reports. And the financial audit reports would be the reports that have recommendations related to internal controls. And so that's kind of been merged into this report, so it has both. So last year we looked back. So this report, sorry, has recommendations, and we did a deep dive on recommendations from reports released in 2023. The next iteration will go back and look at any of the recommendations from 2023 that hadn't been implemented, and then also look at recommendations from 2024. So we're kind of, every year we're going to add another year until we get to the five-year look back that's required by law, and then we will kind of keep going with our five-year look back. Our intent is to do it for every report we released in the previous year. I will tell you, we have our financial audit division working on their pieces of this right now, and they are following up on 157 recommendations across 18 agencies right now. So there's a lot of follow-up work, which is, again, why the additional resources were so necessary. So that's what I expect to be included in the next report, and then again, each year we're hoping to add, you know, to roll it forward until we get to the full 5 years. And I guess we'll see how we do with that. Hopefully agencies implement, we check that off the list, and then we don't have to go back in and recheck that every year.
And thank you, Madam Auditor. And to the, so it's 53% implemented, 28 partial, 19 not. As you were going through, or your team was going through those, how many of the not were in the category of there's virtually no way we could do this, the legislature has created a paradigm that we couldn't possibly implement those things, versus just not getting around to it or not being interested in implementing? I think that's one of the questions that I've had for a while since we chatted about this in my office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And that may be more than you were prepared to answer this morning, but you could always get back to us. I mean, the reason that we did House File 3 the way I wrote it was I wanted to find, of the recommendations or the things that are created in law, how many of them are things that as legislators we create that are impossible to achieve versus just not being viewed as something that agencies wanted to do? Because that's a fairly stark contrast. So that's really the gist of the question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that none of them were impossible to do. For the recommendations that agencies had not implemented yet, they did not cite to us, and this was based on a quick skim, so if somebody finds an outlier, I'm open to that. But none of them were stated, we simply can't do this, we need the legislature to act. Some of them were, well, we don't rebid our contracts for another year, and so we can't implement this change until we rebid our contracts. It's reasonable, right? Now, that's marked as not implemented because it hasn't been implemented yet, but that's more, the timing is more just the, you know, we have to wait for them to have an opportunity to implement it. So none of these that I have seen are based on impossible legislation.
Very good. So one thing that you had said and one of our staff had pointed out is that you've also been getting phone calls from other legislatures around the country regarding the implementation of this. Could you maybe shed some light on that as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's the Levin Center out of Michigan, which is it has a oversight and accountability center for state government, and they have especially been really interested in the implementation of this report. We've spoken with them and emailed with them, and I've spoken with one of the representatives of that center at conferences where they have then highlighted this report and the value of it, frankly, for accountability within state governments. So there are a couple of other states that have similar reports, and I'm starting to see these types of things roll out across additional states.
Very good. We have a few member questions, and hopefully that will spur on some other discussion. I know that Representative Anderson, you started the list off first. So Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the report. Interesting, on the first page you have what I would call kind of a disclaimer. A couple of times you mentioned as resources allowed. Did that hold you back, or if resources were unlimited, could you have done more, or what Why that disclaimer like that?
Sure.
Madam Auditor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. Well, that is how the law is written. So that's one thing. So we wanted to note that. And the legislature did give us two additional staff to do this work, which was really helpful. But we weren't able to get started on this report until July or August in terms of hiring people and getting started. So we did have some limitation on how much work we could do based on time and resources and staff. So it's kind of a combination of both. I think there will always be, regardless, even if we had unlimited resources, some limitation, simply because some of the work we do. So I think about our special review on Feeding Our Future, the Department of Education's oversight of Feeding Our Future. To really get back into, for example, how the department is reviewing and overseeing financial reimbursements for something like that, we'd almost have to do the whole study over again completely. And so that's not feasible. It's maybe not the best use of our resources. So even with unlimited resources, I think there's better choices to make in some cases. But I think as we continue with our work and we get our practices more in tune and that we have a full year to do it with our two new staff, hopefully that language will be more limited.
Representative Anderson. Nothing further. Representative Quam, you are up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the you were talking resources. My feeling or understanding and remembering is that when we looked at stuff as in the auditor, it was documentation and data and stuff that the agencies had. And in rare occasions, which I believe went a little bit farther, was actually going out to the entities that they interacted with to verify the documentation. Has that been prevalent or is it fairly new?
Madam Auditor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam. We regularly go out to the end user, if you will, or to the grantee to do additional audit work. And so to the extent we feel like we need to for this follow-up work, we will do that. I think our hope, again, in using those two staff resources across all of these different recommendations as wisely as possible, we're going to try to limit looking at what the agency has and what the agency has implemented and doing our tests at the agency level. But if we need to go out to folks in the field, if you will, then we'll do that. But our recommendations are really focused at agencies. And so if we're looking to see if the recommendations have been implemented, my expectation is that we can manage that work again at the agency level rather than going back out to the field.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, since some funding, a fair amount, comes from the federal government and there's additional constraints, regulations, processes required by the federal government than we have with the state. And you've been with the auditor long enough to back when the auditor was doing all of these verifications required by the feds on the programs. Can you give us just a feeling of the difference between the processes that the legislature is forcing them to do and those of which the federal government has different, and then maybe which ones might be useful, a couple examples for us as the legislators to implement so that, first of all, they're supposed to be doing it for the feds, so it should be no additional burden for them to actually do it for the state funds.
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam. So the first example that comes to mind for me is how federal grants put a limit on administrative expenses for federal grants, or what expenses are allowable under administrative expenses. And the federal government has a pretty detailed kind of coding guide on what is and isn't allowable. But in some cases, honestly, the federal government allows a larger percentage of a grant's money to be used for administrative expenses than the state. So That's one example where the feds have more strict, more detailed requirements. Whether or not that's something the state would want to emulate, though, I'm not sure. Also, the state agencies have a large number of grants that are only state funded, right? And so they're not already doing those things for the state funded grants. And in some cases, like in a DHS, they could be very different programs. And so it's not necessarily something they're already doing and it's easy to apply. I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a more nuanced, it's not going to be a sledgehammer. We're going to have to use a scalpel, I think about applying some of those federal requirements to the state, if that's what you want us to do.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you. One last thing. The federal government has been much better at reclaiming funds that have been misspent. I think it would be useful for the legislature to see what those programs and policies and procedures are so that we could implement them also on the state-funded portions. So that's probably too much to do in a discussion here, but offline, if you could give us that would be wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Auditor Randall, any follow-up to that? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Kwan, I'll be in touch with you. Thanks.
Okay. Next, we have Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I did notice, and of course, I will follow up with them independently, but I did notice there were, in a number of places, so we talked about, I think you said 19 that were unimplemented, but I noticed that there was somewhat of a duplication of effort in those 19, that some of them were actually the same items, just in different agencies. And in particular, for example, there's a section that talks about MIC, the Minnesota Immunization Information Connection, or MIIC software. And if I read this report correctly, and again, I will have conversations with them, but often we're in technology, we're constantly evaluating whether the tools that we have actually meet the job. And what I'm reading in this, and from my understanding of this, is that we've kind of determined that it's possible that we're not finding the capabilities to implement some of these suggestions in the existing software package. And so it looks like they are actually going out and looking at alternative packages that might have the capability to do the items that are being requested, right? And that's not uncommon. That's pretty common, especially in a technology space, that we're constantly evaluating the tools that we have and whether they meet the mark, right? And so I just wanted to make clear that a few of the 19 that we're talking about are actually sort of duplicates and are all related to the same thing. So we're talking about replacing a potential software package, which, you know, I think of the 1, 2, 3, 4, I think there were at least 4 not implemented and a couple partials that in just the minute section, that doesn't include, I'm sorry, I didn't count up the ones in the others that were related to the same software. But in other words, a large chunk of that 19 all relates to one system that's being potentially replaced. So I just wanted to call that out to make that clear to folks. That is normal. Also, there's a lot of I noticed in a number of places we're talking about different types of testing. And specifically manual testing versus machine testing. I also just wanted to point out to folks paying attention that our testing capabilities and the tools that we can now use to do testing of various types is significantly better than it ever was and very much more efficient. We can run a vast array of tests and you can do them in a fraction of the time of having a human actually create a manual test plan, write out all the specs that could take days, then be able to actually manually test against each and every item. Whereas in some cases, we now have tools with the use of AI and so forth that can actually do that testing much faster and more efficiently. So it might be worth noting that, you know, there may be also reasons why some of these are not implemented. And I do see that the report does reflect some of that, so I appreciate that detail. And I know that one of the things that I had said, too, that I had I would still like to see is this idea of sort of a priority or a risk level associated with items. So we know when something isn't, and there's a conversation with the agencies about like how, and that way we're also sort of holding them accountable by having that conversation, right? So yes, we didn't implement this, but for example, if we determine that it's partially implemented, but it's, we have automated tools that are doing that testing rather than manual, we might suggest that the risk is exceptionally low, right? So that would probably help us as legislators to better understand if they didn't implement something or if they partially implemented it, how big of a deal is that actually? Mm-hmm. And because I think the other reason I bring that up is because, quite frankly, you know, while I have expertise and Chair Nash has expertise in IT, so we can kind of read through the language, right? Like, we kind of get it. But if I'm a lay legislator who doesn't know anything about tech, for example, and all I read is not implemented, that looks like a red flag to me. Mm-hmm. Not, oh, well, they got really great AI tools to do this testing, so the risk is really minimal, it's actually really low. So even though they didn't implement a manual testing, it's not like a huge deficiency, right? And I think because the report doesn't reflect that, it's hard for us to know that as a lay person reading through something that may not be their area of expertise. So I'm going to continue to push that I think that that is something that would actually make these reports a little bit more useful. I do appreciate the idea that these open a conversation with agencies to talk further, especially for legislators, about why something was or was not implemented or so and so forth. But I will just continue to beat that drum that I think we need some context for these items. Thank you.
I'll say before we go to Auditor Randall that I think that this is the first report, and as you move forward, constructive criticism can be implemented, but that things that are perhaps more weighty are on the blotter to look at in the next couple of versions of this report. But I do think there's value in looking at, as a function of this report, what's on the horizon that could be explaining as to why that 19% is not implemented. Like they're working on something new and it's going to be brought online, and we fully expect that in the next version of this very same report that that will have been. But to your comment or to your answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner. Thank you for those comments. I too, kind of as I was doing my count of the 19%, I want to be clear that it's percent, not 19 the number. I was thinking about that of like, oh, for the MIC ones in particular, the recommendation is directed to both Minute and MDH. Should I count it once? Should I count it twice? I had that that thought as well. And then I thought, well, we did make the when we made the recommendation to both agencies, then both agencies have a responsibility. And so we felt that it was important to I thought it was important to reflect both of those. Now, could MDH actually do it without Minute, or could Minute actually do it without MDH? I'm not sure. So, fair point, I get it, but we also want to make sure that an agency is, you know, is held responsible for their parts of it. Related to the risk level and priority with findings, I know we've had that conversation, and I think it's a fair point. A couple of thoughts I have. When we use standards like we do for everything, whether it's the law or a best practice, especially for a law, OLA is not in a position to say, well, this law is actually important and this law isn't important, right? And so I think it will be hard for us to put priority levels on findings and recommendations that result from noncompliance with law. For the MIC-related ones that were based on NIST standards and other best practices, you know, it's certainly something that we will keep an eye on as we go forward. In this report, since we hadn't done that priority level when we first wrote the report. I don't think we were going to go back and retroactively do it, but I think it's something that we definitely can try to incorporate more as we move forward with our future reports. Related to the manual testing, absolutely, right? Technology evolves. And so I think part of the process for us and something that we will pay extra attention to in the next iteration is, having maybe a deeper conversation with Minute, right? To say, okay, you haven't done the manual. I'm on page 31 looking at this one. And it's, and they're saying that their current approach allows them to do these things efficiently. They didn't say we've incorporated AI to do those things, so we don't need the manual. I think if they had said, look, we're accomplishing the spirit of the recommendation, but we did it in a different way, we would count that as implemented, right? Because they're achieving it. So this is, they were already doing these things. They thought it was sufficient. We think they should do this extra thing based on NIST standards or other best practices. So that's all part of the conversation that we have with agencies. But I think we can open that up a little bit more to say, okay, you maybe didn't do it exactly the way we said to do it. That's not really the point. The point is the ultimate goal being achieved here, right? And have you found a better way to do it? Great. Right? Because ultimately what we want is those standards, those best practices, the law to be implemented. So I think we're on the same page. We might take a little bit of time to get where you want us to go, but I hear you and I agree with the spirit of your comments, certainly. Thanks.
Representative Bonner, follow up, or are you good?
I will just say, and it is my intention and my thought that, being able to have that dialogue with them to go a little bit deeper, because to your point, I don't expect that you can on your own independently evaluate the level of a risk. That wouldn't be fair to ask of you. I don't think that's fair. But it would open up the conversation to be able to rate that in working with them so that you could come to an understanding of what that might look like. But the other part of that is that having that conversation is also an accountability measure. Right, because it forces an agency to give that justification, and so not only does it help us be more educated as to the level of risk, but it also goes to a little bit deeper dive, so we can really understand and hold them accountable if they have fallen down or if they need to. But certainly, it would certainly be very helpful to have that information going forward for us as legislators. Thank you,
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Randall, for the report. Can you review again the percentages? It was 58 for implemented. What were the other two again? 58%.
Auditor Randall, I can do that for you if you like. It's 53, 28, and 19, if I'm correct. 53 full implementation, 28 partial implementation, 19 not.
Okay. Then where does work needed to determine implementation fall?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. I didn't include those in my count because we hadn't done the work, and so we don't know either way.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall. So is your intent on those that this was one of those timing things that those would be classified over time?
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. That's certainly the hope. Yeah.
Representative Kraft, anything further?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in a situation, you do great work, right? But in a situation where you make a recommendation and you later realize, we got it wrong, right? Which can happen. How would that be represented in the report?
Auditor Randall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, it's a great question, and I don't have an answer right now. I think that would be fleshed out in the dialogue with agencies. Maybe it's the getting at the spirit of what we are trying to achieve again. So it's not necessarily this prescribed way to skin the cat. Just now I got myself into this metaphor, just that the cat is skinned, sorry.
I'm a cat owner.
And so, sorry. So maybe it's that way. The other thing we do have here is a not applicable. Which, it's not applicable to the agency's current circumstances. So maybe we have a recommendation to do manual testing, to use Representative Bonner's example, and now Minute and MDH have gone in, they've implemented a whole new system, now they have AI, like, okay, you know, it's no longer applicable.
Okay. Note to self, hide the cats from the auditor. Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I made that same note.
Yeah,
a couple comments then. One is I think, you know, it was nice to get this nice report, but we had another entire one printed out in our handout, so we could figure out how not to get two copies of a big report.
I have a bill that's making its way forward, if you remember, that I authored that will put it electronically for you.
And, Mr. Chair, I think I signed on to that bill.
Oh, great. Kraft.
And then last, so I did look, there's one area on sustainable building guidelines, and actually, in your recommendations to the legislature, I have a bill that we heard before that addresses several of those. So House File 3737 is laid over for possible inclusion already, and I hope the chairs will consider the inclusion of it. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to hear maybe just a brief overview of page 19, the Minnesota Department of Administration, and specifically if you could touch on the oversight of state-funded grants to nonprofit organizations. There's some things that were only partially implemented, but things that weren't implemented. It says the OGM has not strengthened other key policies, such as establishing minimum standards for progress reports or requiring site visits. So could you just give us a brief overview of that and specifically touch on that partial implementation or non-partial implementation? Thank you.
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Davis. And I'll note that there is a representative from the Department of Administration here if you'd like to hear from them. And I also am going to call up, if I can call a friend, Deputy Legislative Auditor Jody Munson-Rodriguez, because she is going to know more of the details on that report in particular. And I'll just start talking while she comes up. My understanding on the minimum standards for progress reports is that they acknowledge that different grants are different and they wanted to leave that discretion to the agencies. But I think, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I would have Deputy Legislative Auditor Rodriguez.
By all means, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jody Munson-Rodriguez, and I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. And excuse me for the frog in my throat. Yeah, absolutely.
Better than a cat.
And I also have a cat. I just want to note that always been safe in the auditor's presence. So as I was noting, as you're all aware, there have been a number of changes, both from the legislature and the Department of Administration when it comes to requirements around grants management. A lot of them happened back in 23, and they've kind of been ongoing. We selected just a couple of things that we recommended within that report in 2023 that still have not been implemented. In what we pointed out here, progress reports, we think those are a really important mechanism for ensuring that the activities of the grant are occurring and that the goals are being met. Right now, there really are no requirements for what those progress reports can look like. And in doing our work, we found often first that they're just not even being submitted. But second, if they are being submitted, they have such minimal information in them and they're repeated over and over over months so that they really aren't helpful. That's one place where we think that additional requirements could be helpful. Another one is site visits. They are required to do monitoring visits, but those can be done by phone. And so, you know, one of our recommendations was to require, for example, for certain grants that are over a certain threshold, should require on-site monitoring. So while we recognize that a number of things have moved forward to strengthen grants management, there are a few other things that we noted in that report that we think could make them even stronger.
Representative Davis.
Yeah, so just one follow-up. So you definitely believe, as do we, that the Department of Admin does have the resources and the authority to go out and actually do site visit verifications to make sure that people receiving grants are who they say they are.
To the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. We are asking that the actual grantor go out and do site visits. So, for example, if the Department of Human Services makes a grant to an entity, that the requirement would be for DHS to go out and do those site visits.
Representative Davis? Okay. Representative Koznick.
Good morning. Thank you. This is my third copy of the report that I've had, because I requested it when it was sent to us as a notice to have my legislative assistant print it out for me. And I appreciated particularly the work on the Metropolitan Council and the Southwest light rail construction and oversight, which a huge topic. It could probably monopolize all of the legislative auditor's time and resources just digging into that and how we can be more efficient in both the overall council, but also the Southwest light rail that's been well documented. And we'll see when that thing finally ever gets open. But it's getting close, I'm told. So the report and the work that you do is very valuable to us as legislators, in my opinion. You know, we have good staff and partisan staff and nonpartisan staff, but your ability to research and investigate a little bit more deeply, I think, is very valuable to us. And then so this report is very helpful as a chair. I went through and kind of looked at the areas that were under my committee's area, and a lot of it, some was implemented and some needs additional work, as I mentioned. Kind of a little fur ball in my throat. Some of the other parts of it were still needing a little bit more research and stuff, so we'll continue to work on that. But I'm kind of curious, how have the agencies responded to recommendations, this report and other recommendations that you've done over the years? Do they find it as valuable, or is it kind of a partnership, or more hesitant and resistance to work with the auditor's office? Now, how's that relationship go?
Which auditor would like to play with that cat toy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry I'm not having that. And to make things worse, I will say I'm a dog person. So so anyways, but thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick. I would say our relationships with agencies are strong and good and respectful and professional. There are very few times when we have resistance from agencies, and when that happens, we are able to work through those. And you know, sometimes it's a matter of, especially program staff who may not interact with us very much, saying, "Who are you, and what information do you want?" I don't think so. And I always think that's good, right? Because they have a responsibility to protect not public data as well, and to ensure that they are doing their job. And so often when we get a little bit of resistance from agencies, I'm always like, good job, right? But no, really, we need your information. And then we work through that, and it's all fine. You know, we have a healthy dialogue, I would say, around our recommendations, our findings and recommendations. We do have a pretty robust process, or a very robust process, where, you know, the subject of the audit gets to review a draft report, and they go through and they give us comments, and we meet with them, and we take that feedback and comments very seriously. We do make changes to the report to ensure it's accurate, to ensure it's fair, it's objective. So I think throughout the process, it's very positive, I think. I mean, do they love us coming? No, we create work for them, right? But many, many of the commissioners have said that they appreciate the role, they understand that we're all there to make things work better. You know, maybe they're just saying that to us, but, you know, I think it's sincere. When it comes to, though, actually implementing the recommendations, you know, I think it's a little more mixed. Although, I found this report helpful because it was a lot more positive than I had expected, or kind of my sense was. And not all. Back to Representative Bonner's point, not all recommendations are created equal. Not just in terms of the risk, but also in terms of how hard they are to implement. And so, you know, I think having an honest conversation with us and with you about the recommendations and what we're trying to achieve and what's realistic or feasible given, you know, whatever the current environment is, which, let's be honest, changes every day, is a reasonable thing. So long answer, but all in all, I think it's a positive relationship, a healthy relationship, right? I wouldn't say we're partners. We shouldn't be partners, right? We're their auditors, and we're independent, and that's an important line. But I think it's very respectful, and at least that's from our side, and I know the administration is here to talk, and hopefully they say the same thing.
Thank you, Madam Auditor. And I will say Ms. Mingy is here. And I think Ms. Byrol is here as well from administration. If there are questions that would facilitate that, and we do have MMB available for comment. But I think before we move on to the next question, or go back to Representative Kosnick, and you've heard me quote this before, that you can't manage what you can't measure. One of the fundamental principles of industrial engineering that my wife beat into my head. I think it's important that we look at all recommendations or law or best practices as things that we should be striving for in order for us to better manage the enterprise of state government. And I think that we would all agree with that. Do we necessarily like some of the findings? Probably not. You know, there are, and it could be cut both ways for an administration of a different stripe. Eventually, someone's going to be measured to the point where they say, I don't like that, but it doesn't take away from the veracity of what's been found. And I think that that's the important part that we need to make sure as legislators that we are looking at this report and future reports and the effort that we're putting behind it to say we're going to find things that may or may not always be cheery, but we owe it to the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota to do a better job, whether it be Southwest Light Rail or grant management or pick a thing. Those are the minutiae of state government that matters, that I think that we all agree is important to the point where we want to make sure that we're getting it right. And again, as the author, speaking of the legislative intent of House File 3, the legislative intent was to equip the auditor to go in and follow up on things that were made as recommendations. And if you've never been in the executive management suite of a company, when auditors come in, it's not like a friendly recommendation like, hey, you know, you might want to do this thing and it would be great if you did. Those are recommendations that you're going to be measured against as to whether or not you're running a healthy enterprise. That's the goal of this. And that, to other legislators in other states that have reached out to me about this, that's what they're looking for as well. So moving on, Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I take from that the subtext that we should all be a little less defensive about this as we proceed with our questions. But the question I have, Madam Auditor, is, first of all, there's a few pieces of these where it seems like reasonable minds could potentially differ about the actual recommendation. For example, MDE was told, or the legislature was told, to clarify MDE's role with respect to the achievement gap. And I think a lot of people who've been working in education for a long time believe that they understand what MDE's role, which is to support school districts who are principally responsible for actually educating students and ensuring that the opportunity gap is closed. But also, the legislature adopted in the previous biennium legislation that, for example, funded to a significant extent literacy training for teachers and special education funding for all staff. These are things for which it doesn't look like either we or MDE got credit in this report for actually, you know, creating pass-through revenue to districts to close some of those achievement gaps on metrics other than just race, which is something that the department raised in its response to you to the original report. So I guess my question is twofold. One is, how do those things get reflected in your report, or is it just a yes-no based on your original recommendation? And then secondly, are there recommendations to the legislature regarding possible resources? Because for, you know, some of the responses you got, especially from the judicial branch, but also from some agencies, where we don't have the budget allocation to do what you're telling us to do. That's not a I refuse, that's a we lack resources, right?
Auditor Randall or Rodriguez, who would like to handle this?
If I may, thank you. Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. With regard to our recommendation about the MDE's role in the achievement gap, oftentimes, and I think that this is what we found here, is that it can be unclear exactly what the agency is expected to do in order to ensure that something is happening. And so while all of these other activities are going on around it and absolutely have an impact on it, it was unclear to us what was exactly MDE's responsibilities in ensuring that certain goals were met, or if they had a responsibility to be reviewing data on that and to be following up with the school districts and to be taking action if it's not. And so when that's not clear in law, we can't say whether a department is doing what it is supposed to be doing or not. So this is one place where we just felt that some clarity from the legislature would help both MDE ensure that it's doing what is expected and that we can go in and then take a look and see whether that is happening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Luger-Nicolai. To layer on to what Deputy Legislative Auditor Rodriguez said, we don't necessarily look at other actions that happened and then say, well, this recommendation wasn't addressed, but these five other things happened that are related to it, but not exactly it. Because we're not going back and redoing the evaluation. It's simply an update on were these recommendations that we made implemented. So it is that narrower scope. Now, again, if we're talking and having that dialogue with an agency and they say, well, no, we didn't implement that recommendation, but these five other things happened and the spirit has been achieved, then that would probably be reflected. That should be reflected in our notes. So again, the short answer is no, we don't do it, but we would look at that context if it had a direct impact on the recommendation. Regarding the resources, OLA typically does not identify opportunities for where those resources could come. We haven't looked at how an agency is managing all of its resources. When we go in to do a financial performance audit or a program evaluation, you know, we are looking generally at one very specific area, and we don't know if they are managing all of their resources across their agency properly so that we could then come to you all and say, this agency needs more money. Now, I'll say one slight exception to that is a report we released this past January on the Ombudspersons for Families, and that is an office that has vast, vast responsibilities, and its budget is around $800,000. And that was, you know, it's a 3, 4, 5 person, depending on the month, office. So we did look at that whole office, and we said, there's a mismatch here, right? We said, legislature, if you want them to do all these things, they're going to need more resources. Mm-hmm. Legislature, if you just want them to have this many resources, decide what their priority should be. So again, we didn't say come up with more money, but we did identify a mismatch because we had a more holistic view in that example. So hopefully that
thank you, Madam Auditor. And I'll say, Representative Luger-Nicolai, you did touch on something that I think is valuable, and as finance chairs here, as we set budgets, and you came in midterm, you didn't have the joy of slogging through a finance bill. Those are things that finance chairs should get into the habit of asking of the things that we pass into law. Are we sufficiently resourcing the agencies to do this? But the same question is, are they currently significantly resourced enough to handle some of the other things? So I think that's a very good point. I think that it's something that as finance chairs, we should take the onus of responsibility in ourselves. And I would also say, and I'll agree with this, with the tenor of what you're saying, is that when we pass laws here, we should make sure that as we pass them that govern state law or state government, that they're achievable, as opposed to sometimes perhaps more aggressive or grandiose and lofty achievement. So any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't know why I turned my mic off. It was weird. One question, and again, this is sort of me harping on MDE, is that, you know, a number of the laws that we passed, and this was particularly true with respect to World's Best Workforce, but also with other pieces of work that they are expected to complete, you know, the way that those laws usually came to be over the course of many discussions was that they gave MDE the ability to, for example, accept reports but not enforce any quality control over those reports, because the prevailing view was that we should preserve the local control of the local educational agency. And so I guess one of the things that is concerning to me is that some of these, the question of whether or not something gets implemented may run headlong into actual legislative priority to preserve local control over the agency's ability to approve or reject a report as opposed to simply warehouse it.
Auditor Randall, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that insight. Certainly, our intent is that when we're doing those reports in the first place and making those recommendations in the first place, those are conversations that we have been having with the agency and with stakeholders at the time, so that we aren't making recommendations that contradict what the law says. Legislative intent is a slippery thing, mm-hmm. And it depends on when the laws were passed and who was there and who's in charge now. And so we first focus on the law, you know, as written, but then we talk to stakeholders, agency staff, anybody who will talk with us, legislative staff, to try to get a good understanding. We listen to old hearings, all of that. So I guess my hope is that we're not making those types of wrong recommendations in the first place. And if we're heading in that direction, that our review process stops us in our tracks. But I would welcome a side conversation with you, honestly, to learn more about where you think maybe we went astray. Thanks.
And I'm going to call Ms. Mingy up to the table just to confirm, and you don't have to leave. There's three seats up there. But just to talk about how this has gone so far. And again, this is the first, we haven't even hit a year since Chair Cleburne and I negotiated the bill to get us to this point. And I think that it's important to recognize that this is going to get better and evolve, and I think it's already very valuable. But before Ms. Mingy, you proceed, we'll allow Chair Cleburne to weigh in very briefly. And we are 3 minutes away from adjournment, so we'll be brief.
Yeah, and these, Auditor Randall, maybe you could get me answers to these, but I'd really like to have these in the record because this is a new report, and I think it's really important for us to know. So what was the actual cost of the report? What did you learn yourself about your own process in doing this work? When the legislature might actually be at fault, I really did appreciate the recommendations to the legislature at the bottom. And today in listening to the conversation, you know, about monitoring visits, we've had that bill before us, we've not passed it, we've been asked for resources for IT and modernization and all kinds of things that we've never passed. And then I think, too, maybe quickly today, for people to understand the scope of the work that you do, I think it would be good just on the public record to say, while you and I may know this information, the public would not. So if you could say, how large is your office, the Office of the Legislative Auditor? What is your total budget? How are the audits funded? And the reason I'm asking this is because in the overview of your office on the website, these questions are not really readily available to the general public. And then your comment about agencies managing their resources, I found to be particularly interesting, right? Because that is a prioritization that has to happen every day, right? And the emergency of today may outweigh the long-term planning in some of these things. And so much of internal control is about long-term planning, right? And so we as legislators need to know how to make sure that our agencies have the resources and the time to do both, right? To Chair Nash's point about what finance chairs should be looking at. So I think the other piece I would like to know is in this 19% that was not implemented in your report, how many of those are actually the fault of the legislature, right? So anyway, I will step back, and those are maybe some things that we can talk about at a future time.
Auditor Randall, I think in the interest of time, that might be a valuable side conversation that we can then make sure. And then from MMB, Deputy Commissioner Mingy, if you could, you've heard a couple of questions from folks as to how has this gone. If you could just give us a minute and 30 seconds, it looks like, of your impression of how the implementation of this has been going from your perspective of the agency. And please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Anna Mingy, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. You know, we at MMB have appreciated the work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor on this report, in particular their coordination with state agencies. It has gone well, and it has been sort of an important just continued step forward in increased collaboration and coordination between MMB and the OLA. So we are grateful for that, the partnership. I think you all probably are aware that MMB has had a role in helping agencies sort of track, monitor, and implement OLA report recommendations for a number of years, and this feels sort of like a valuable add-on as it helps to focus attention on the implementation of those reports, both for agencies and policymakers. It enables sort of dialogue and shared understanding across branches of government, and it's also both the report and the resources that go with it are a really important step towards independent review and validation of some of those corrective action and implementations, which is something that MMB is hoping we can go farther on this year through things such as the governor's budget recommendations. So,
thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Joy had a very brief question, and then I'll close us up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Auditor Randall, for all your work. You know, one of the things, I'm a checks and balance person, and when I turn to page 5 and I see a thing that says deed should resolve inaccurate payments and prepayments with vendors, it says not implemented, and it says deed told us it is not recovering overpayment of $3,750 due to a low dollar amount. It's just, to me, it's just astonishing that what dollar amount is not good enough to ask for back. We're good stewards of taxpayers' money. That right there on page 5 should be flagging every legislator in this room. And whether if we think it's something we shouldn't talk about or don't, but I appreciate your work. $3,750 is taxpayers' money, and we should be doing what we can to collect no matter dollar amount. It surprised me that they said that's not enough. So thank you.
Chair Cleavorn, quickly.
No, it's all right. I just said generally in our committee practice has been once the other chair has spoken, we just move on.
I had missed Representative Joy's request. Auditors, Ms. Mingy, thank you for being here this morning. I think this is a very good conversation around what we've been able to accomplish in less than a year, and look forward to things moving forward. And I will speak for the auditor. She's more than happy to come by and talk to any legislator about how this can be more useful. And with that, we are adjourned.